Thank you, Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, February 12th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
First Lady Grace Mugabe attacks Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his group as factionalism ravages the ruling party.
Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC expels Bulawayo Senator Matson Hlalo.
So Zani Kupe, she's the one who causes all these commotions which we've had ever since I've been in MDC. We find that these people just bring their friends and relatives at given positions. You take that one.
And fired grain marketing board workers came by the GMB headquarters demanding outstanding salaries.
Our position is we're going to be here as long as it takes, because this is where our money is and we can't go anywhere. The reason why people are here, the landlords there, we cannot pay rent, we cannot afford the rentals, so we have nowhere to go.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The MDCT has expelled lawmaker Senator Matson Hlalo, accusing him of dragging the name of the party in the mud by taking his leadership to court over power squabbles. Officials accused Hlalo of fomenting divisions in Bulawayo, where violence has erupted between his followers and a faction allegedly aligned to party Vice President Thokozani Kupe. But Hlalo was defiant today, telling reporter Ntungameli Nkomo that he does not recognize the expulsion.
I got all the facts before me, and the facts can be presented to anyone who cares to look at the facts. Because the letter they talk about, I was given the letter 1 month after it had been written. So that is the time I should have made my presentation, it expired. And this letter was given by none other than Honorable Gonis, who then gives me a letter 1 month after it was written. And I was supposed to have responded to it 2 weeks after it had been written, but I was given 1 month later. So it just shows you the crookery which, you know, obtains in our institution, that people do what pickpockets do, and you say you do that in a party.
What are you going to do now?
It's just a nullity. We are going to meet whoever has done that head on. We don't run away from a fight.
Is this a result of the factional wars that have dogged the Bulawayo for a long time? We understand
There is this lady, Thokozani Kupe. She's the one who causes all these commotions which we've had ever since I've been in MDC. You find that these people just bring their friends and relatives at given positions. You take that one. And we are saying we cannot have that.
Expelled MDCT Bulawayo Senator Matson Hlalo, speaking with Ntungameli Nkomo. A party spokesman for Bulawayo Province, Felix Magalela Mafa, said Hlalo has no one to blame but himself because he was called for a disciplinary hearing but refused.
He was warned, he was advised, he was called several times. However, the main interesting argument that he did not take heed of the president's advice, the National Council advice, that he should withdraw the cases.
He is blaming party deputy president Thokozani Kupe for his expulsion, saying that this is a culmination of the factionalism within the MDCT in Bulawayo. What say you?
I don't think there is any relationship. Kupe, vice president, is the national vice president, and Mr. Hlalo has been a member of Bulawayo Province as deputy chair. There is no correlation that they are fighting for a posse whatsoever.
That was MDCT spokesman for Bulawayo Province, Felix Magalela Mafa, speaking with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo.
A former grain marketing board employees whose contracts were terminated following a Supreme Court ruling sometime last year, which gave employers the right to sack workers after giving them a three-month notice, are camping at the company headquarters, demanding outstanding salaries and allowances. The former workers say the government should intervene as they have been demanding their dues without any action from the GMB management. Stephen Machaya, GMB Workers Union President, speaks with Studio 7 about what's going on.
The main issue that why we are here is about salary arrears. We were employees who were dismissed by GMB last year in August following that Supreme Court ruling which allowed the employers to terminate employers' contracts on a three-month notice. So we were dismissed last year. But at the time of our dismissal, GMB was owing us salary arrears of more than 10 months, and we're not paid those arrears. Not even our terminal benefits, not even the package. But right now, we are gathered here to claim our salary arrears. We have been here since Tuesday, and today is Friday. The reaction of the authorities has been very discouraging, but at the same time, we once came here in January, and we had an agreement of a payment plan that we were supposed to follow. And they didn't. That's why we came back here. So when we came back, management had a new position, which was different from the one that we had agreed when we came in January. So when we came, they just said, we don't have money. We're going to pay you as and when we get it. Our position is we're going to be here as long as it takes, because this is where our money is, and we can't go anywhere. The reason why people are here, the landlords there, we cannot pay rent. We cannot afford the rentals. So we have nowhere to go. As much as we might want to go back home, we have not even bus fares. We can't go there because the landlords have locked us out as their tenants because we have not been paying rentals. After our dismissal, they have gone to recruit, to employ other people to fill in our positions. To some extent, they are even their relatives. So we feel there was no justification for terminations of these contracts.
And that was Stephen Machaya, GMB Workers Union President, speaking with Studio 7. Over 1,264 GMB workers were dismissed last year following the Supreme Court ruling.
The trial of former Reserve Bank advisor and ZANU-PF legislator Munyaradzi Kereke, who is accused of allegedly raping his two nieces, continued yesterday with the prosecution centered on a gun used when he committed the crime. Kereke is accused of allegedly raping his then 11-year-old niece and fondling the other, then 15, all of them at gunpoint. He is denying the charges, saying the gun in question, a property of the Reserve Bank, had already been returned to the bank during the alleged assault.
However, appearing before private prosecutor Charles Warara, head of RBZ Security, Gracia Muradzikwa, said his superior, one Mirirai Chiremba, approached him sometime in 2010, asking if he could take the gun and backdate it in his records so that it would appear like it had been surrendered at an earlier date. Kereke is being represented by James Makia and Nathan Chigoro after firing his previous lawyers for reasons not yet explained. For an analysis, we asked legal commentator Kucaca Phulu if the delay in prosecuting the case may go in the accused's favor.
In such a matter, it is open to the accused person in conducting his defense to request that the matter be referred to the Constitutional Court, because he will allege that there has been an undue delay in the prosecution of the matter, and it is prejudicing him in a number of ways. And depending on whether the state is able to justify the delay, because either it's a complicated case or for whatever reason, it's just possible that that option of going to the Constitutional Court may succeed if properly prosecuted by the accused person.
But in this case, where we understand the matter was not prosecuted because the Attorney General was refusing, would you say that this can be used?
It is possible for them to raise that as the excuse for the delay. However, that wouldn't matter because the accused person as a citizen, his rights should not be breached by the state. And, you know, the Prosecutor General does represent the state. Whatever decisions he makes on behalf of the state. So that reason for a delay in my view, would not be an acceptable reason.
That was legal commentator Kucaca Phulu. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
The Harare City Council says it has taken all necessary measures to ensure that it contains typhoid that has been reported in some parts of the city. Council spokesman Michael Chideme says so far they have dealt with 15 cases, while they are following up on about 120 suspected cases. Cases of typhoid have so far been recorded in Glen Nora, Glenview, Budiriro, Opley, and Hatfield. Chideme tells Studio 7 his council is also making sure that all illegal food vending sites are cleared of any structures in order to get rid of places that can harbor bacteria causing typhoid.
We are very prepared as the local authority to deal with the issue of typhoid. Our teams are on the ground, going around, educating the people on the dangers of typhoid. Right now, we only have 15 confirmed cases which have been treated, and we are doing the necessary follow-ups on anybody who might have been in contact with these 15 people. And all departments in council are now geared up to attend to the issues of typhoid. With respect to waste management, has collected garbage religiously. Water provision, there has to be enough water. The health department, there has to be on the ground making sure that there is enough education.
What are you doing to educate people, especially vendors?
In terms of vendors, we are making sure that the food vendors are not trading from illegal sites. We are removing all the illegal sites within the city. Our communications division also has to be out there educating the people, giving information like I'm doing right now with you. So these are all the mechanisms we have put in place to make sure that people are educated on the dangers of typhoid. And I think we are above the situation right now because we are attending to it religiously. We are giving other tablets to all the affected areas. We are doing school programs, visiting schools to educate the children. We are also doing surveillance in the city to make sure that any cases that we come up with are dealt with as soon as they emerge.
That was Michael Chideme, Harare City Council spokesman, speaking with Studio 7 from Zimbabwe's capital city, Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
again, Zimbabwe implement a biometric voters system.
Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad says his forces will regain control of all rebel-held areas in Syria and that any peace negotiations will not interrupt his army's fight against terrorism.
A New York City police officer was found guilty of second-degree manslaughter Thursday for fatally shooting an unarmed black man in 2014.
And Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is meeting with the head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, on the sidelines of a security conference in Munich after the Western Military Alliance and the United States announced the plans for the biggest military build-up in Europe since the Cold War.
Some Zimbabweans have commended the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission for allowing ways of using the biometric voting system, saying this will minimize electoral fraud. But others, like the leader of the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, Elton Mangoma, say this system won't work in Zimbabwe. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa has more details from Harare.
Mangoma believes that it is a futile exercise to introduce this system without eliminating the fear factor among voters and making a wholesome reform of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, said to be controlled by members of the country's spy network, the Central Intelligence Organization, and other security agents.
We as RDZ are very much against its introduction, particularly at this time, and we urge other political parties and civil society to think long and hard before they endorse BVS.
He claims that duplicate voting is not the major issue in the Zimbabwean electoral system, which is what BVS seeks to address.
A computer system can fail, and the BVS system has failed before. Zimbabwe cannot afford this drama. A computer system can be manipulated, and very few, if any, of the political parties and civic society have any skill to detect such manipulation.
He further claims that this system is likely to be abused by the ruling party, which has over the years been accused of being aided by the Registrar General's office and ZEC to allegedly rig elections.
This will be giving ZANU-PF and ZEC a free hand to rig with the permission of the political party. Colleagues, you cannot control what you do not know. ZANU-PF and ZEC control the passwords and the override authority. These are the very people whom the Zimbabwean people do not trust. They can alter the data at any time. Remember, whoever has the authority to add voters' data can change or delete it, and none of us can ever detect it.
His fears are echoed by Harare resident Rizin Chanaiwa, who argues that current power outages in Zimbabwe can hamper a biometric voter registration and voting system.
I think biometric voter registration is a noble idea, considering the what we have in 2013 when there were allegations of NICUF. However, the downside of it is that with the current power shortages and with no solutions in sight, I think we can implement it in 2018 because we don't have electricity in rural areas, and those areas that have been electrified through the rural electrification program are experiencing a lot of power shortages.
But Rindai Chipfundefava of the Zimbabwe Election Support Center says while the biometric voting system has its own shortfalls, it is far much better than the current system, which she claims has disenfranchised a lot of voters.
If you remember 2013 elections, the most problem was the issue of alleged use of voting slips, and hence the use of multiple voters was also alleged to have been taking place. Then there is also the issue of people have left the diaspora, people have died. So if you call afresh a voters' roll, it means everyone needs to come afresh, and then you are also guaranteed that it's a fresh voters' roll. So there is an opportunity to move to something much higher, where it is done for integrity of the electoral process. Why not take the opportunity now?
Chifundevava adds that biometric voting system won't be the only way of addressing Zimbabwe's electoral problems, as there's need to have complementary reforms for Harare to have free and fair elections. Chifundevava adds that the biometric voting system won't be the only way of addressing Zimbabwe's electoral problems, as there's need to have complementary reforms for Harare to have free and fair polls.
It's not a panacea to all our electoral problems. So let's not focus on only voter registration. We need also to look at the other range of legislative and administrative processes.
Abraham Isaac, who has been observing elections in the region for a long time, concurs, noting that the advantages of the biometric voting system outweigh its shortcomings, and Zimbabwe is on the right track.
This is the only way to go for Zimbabwe. It has been overdue. A number of African countries are actually doing the same. European countries are doing the same. It actually safeguards the vote later on during the voting process. The voter registration, if it is done that way, it will also mean that the issue of duplication, the issue of using slips and so forth, it will go away.
An information technology expert, Tatenda Chiboroman, says the biometric voting system ensures integrity and reliability of gathered information.
Digital census is a very secure way of registering voters, and it also makes use of a number of things to verify that a person is who he or she really is. For example, apart from the name and the ID numbers, one could be verified using fingerprints or special features, ETC, which are quite unique for each voter.
Chiburuma, however, doubts the likelihood of Zimbabwe implementing the system.
However, the disadvantage is that this technology requires dedicated machinery, for example, the fingerprint scanners, the facial cameras to recognize faces, etc. And at the moment, especially considering our economic situation, where the government is probably failing to even raise money to pay civil servants, I don't think they will be prepared to roll out this program because it's quite expensive.
The lack of an efficient, trusted and credible voter registration system has compromised Zimbabwe's electoral processes, a situation that contributed to the West's decision to impose targeted sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle. African nations using the biometric voter system include Kenya, Namibia, and other nations. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today tore into a ZANU-PF faction allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, calling itself Team Lacoste as factionalism continues to ravage the ruling party. As Thomas Chiripasi reports from Chiweshe, the First Family appears to be in panic mode.
Addressing thousands of ZANU-PF supporters at Kanyemba School in Chiweshe, Mashonaland and Central Province, Mrs. Mugabe says President Robert Mugabe is not happy with growing factionalism in his party. Mrs. Mugabe took a swipe at Team Lacoste, a ZANU-PF faction allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, saying the camp is fueling divisions in the fractious ruling party.
People spend the whole day wearing Lacoste t-shirts, and when we ask them, they say that is a name of a perfume. Don't abuse the president's totem. We saw children wearing t-shirts with Lacoste signs having inscriptions of the Zimbabwean flag. That flag has a big meaning. Let us not abuse it. If people want you, let them elect you. Factionalism is too much in the party, and people are being fooled. Don't be fooled out there.
Mnangagwa is reportedly angling himself to succeed President Mugabe when he eventually leaves office, while the First Lady, who allegedly leads a group calling itself Generation 40 or G40, said today she is not concerned about people linking her to the group. Mrs. Mugabe told supporters, without mentioning names, that some people in ZANU-PF have too much zeal for power in such a way that they now want to remove President Mugabe from his position, even through illegal means. She warned that such people would be expelled from the ruling party. She openly defended Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo, who has been trading barbs with presidential spokesperson George Jaramba on social networking sites over Mr. Mugabe's succession question. She added that President Mugabe has lost confidence in some of the people that he was touting as his successors, warning that votes of no confidence would soon be passed on these people. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Mnangagwa, who was said to be busy attending state business. Vice President Pelekezela Mpoko, who attended today's rally, said he was not happy with some ZANU-PF leaders that are pushing the tribal card as the race to succeed Mr. Mugabe intensifies. Speaking at the same rally, local government minister Sevia Kasukwere, who is also the ruling party secretary for the commissariat, told the rally that he was prepared to die in the defense of Mr. Mugabe. Kasukwere also warned the party's provincial chairpersons in Midlands, Mashonaland East and Mashingo, where violence reared its ugly head ahead of the explosive ZANU-PF Politburo meeting held on Wednesday, that they would be expelled from ZANU-PF for allegedly sabotaging the president and bringing the name of the ruling party into disrepute.
We are going to die for President Mugabe, if it means we die for him. We must die for him. Who do you want to threaten? Why are you doing that if you believe in President Mugabe? Why are you defending criminals?
Some political analysts told Studio 7 that the First Lady's remarks today indicate that it would not be so long before Mr. Mugabe reshuffles the presidium and cabinet. The controversial First Lady took the opportunity to distribute food supplies, farming equipment, computers, and clothing, among other goods. Reporting for Studio 7 from Chiweshe in Mashonaland Central Province, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Zimbabwe football fans are in for a treat as Pan-African football roars into life with a double weekend feast for Zimbabwe. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story.
Baba Field Stadium will tomorrow be dancing to the tunes of the Cup Champions League, while across the country at Rufaro Stadium, fans will be singing to the song of the Cup Confederation Cup. That is the status quo as Zimbabwe champion Chicken Inn hosts glamorous South African side Mamelodi Sundowns, while Harare City had a death with not-so-popular AS Adema from Madagascar in the Cup Confederation Cup. Sundowns have such a rich vein of form and are coming to Zimbabwe top of the AFCON Premiership table and also having beaten bitter rivals Kaizer Chiefs 2-1, but the Gamecocks coach Joey Antipas is not reading into that. Antipas, both teams have had a 10-day training stint in Zambia, is straight to the point that they are not going to give the cash-rich South Africans too much respect.
We have to take them head on. Don't afford them too much respect and back off them. We've got to be aggressive with them and go out there and close them down as much as possible.
Captain Danny Piri admits that the so-called Brazilians are a good fight with the high-class performance, but say Chicken Inn will take them head-on.
They're a good side. There are many, many good players there, but we take a game, each game different. And we'll go out there and not look at who's on the pitch and put on a best show. The best team will win on the day.
The game conference fan, Levius Ludo, believes that if the Zimbabweans are able to minimize Kamabilia's influence in this game, then they'll be home and dry.
I think they only need to stop Kama so that they'll win.
Dynamo supporter Andrew Rossi, both teams were humiliated 3-0 by the Gamecocks at home last season, had so much faith in Chicken Inn's ability and says the lower side will conquer.
Even though I'm a Dynamo supporter, I see Chicken Inn prevail against Mamelodi Sundowns.
Across the country at Rufaro Stadium, Harare City should not have much of a problem of the slogan of little AS Adema. The team from Madagascar has no history to talk about in African football. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners and experts about deepening factionalism in ZANU-PF as First Lady Grace Mugabe attacks Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa's camp.
And now to recap today's top stories.
First Lady Grace Mugabe attacks Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his group as factionalism ravages the ruling party.
Morgan Tsvangirai's MDC expels Bulawayo Senator Matson Hlalo.
And fired grain marketing board workers came at the GMB headquarters demanding outstanding salaries.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Kande in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.